Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Now you kind of know the rest of the story, I guess. Now you kind of know where things were headed. What am I talking about? Well, we'll dive into it. Don't worry, Late Kick is live, high atop a jam-packed, eventful downtown Nashville, Tennessee, this Thursday, March 14th, the year of our Lord, 2024. The SEC tournament's happening right on the other side of that wall, and Nashville is completely slammed. We got all kinds of people that we rarely get to see who are in town. Had our buddy Ben Mentz stop by the studio a little while ago. But that's not the lead story. The lead story is we're going to have a 14-team playoff, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. And I'm going to talk about it tonight. That news was breaking earlier today. I will discuss it. I told you big news was coming this week, and you're not wasting your time listening to us on this show, at least. Also, conference chaos. I felt the need to break out the chaos meter in March, because that's what you do. And I'm looking around the country, and I think there are some opportunities for some 9 or 10 level chaos on the 1 to 10 scale. And I'll tell you where I think it could go down. There is this new package that Fox has for college football games on a Friday. Many of you asked what I thought. I'll tell you. I got spring questions all around the place. Another thought or two maybe on this whole FSU-ACC thing. Which coaches could win their next conference title first? We'll talk about all of it tonight. They're watching us in Boulder, Colorado, Fairburn, Georgia, Angels, PA, Spring Hill, Florida. Look around, everyone. Last time you're going to see us in this studio. Why? Well, nothing's wrong. Don't worry. Nothing's changing, except that everything's changing. So the show's not going anywhere. We're fine. In fact, we're more than fine. We looked around and said, we can do better. And CBS, to their credit, said, yeah, we think you can too. So we're getting a new studio. In the meantime, we're just going to go on the road. We're going to be down in Fort Lauderdale Sunday. I'm going to be on the road all next week. We're making three stops on the Pate State Speaker Series next week. And you'll find out when next week arrives. But big, big, big changes coming around here. All for the better and all because of you guys. So we appreciate you so much. Let's dive into the show. What should we lead tonight with Colin and Jesse? What's happened out there on the streets of college football today? Let me paper pop it for all the wrong reasons. The college football playoff reportedly will expand to 14 teams in the year of our Lord 2026. Now, you may ask yourself, we haven't even had a 12-team year, have we? No, we haven't. Is that a problem for you? I'm sorry, is that a problem for anyone? Yeah, here's what's happening. According to Pete Thamel and the folks over at ESPN, tomorrow a formality will be signed off on. It's merely a formality at this point that the Power Four conferences and the G5s and Notre Dame, they've got all the signatures they need. And so we're going to a 14-team playoff. Format yet to be decided. What they were trying to decide on was who gets what money. That's really what they were trying to decide upon. Or let me translate more thoroughly for you. A few people are about to make a whole lot more money than they were already making. You'll see none of it. And the prices for everything associated with college football will continue to go up anyway. Because those two things never correlated. So your parking, going to cost more. Your tickets cost more. Your concessions won't go. Nothing will go down because they're making more money. That's why I've never really cheered these folks on. Anyway, I figured it's time to get scientific tonight, because you've listened to me rail against this for too long. And I'm not going to really take a whole lot of the show tonight and do that. Maybe just a little bit of the show, because I know a lot of you have come over here. Some of you are angry. Others are happy because you wanted this and you just want to see me wallow in misery. Either way, it's constructive. That there are worse ways to spend a Thursday night, I will admit. But I wanted to get scientific on this today. And as we all know, like Meemaw used to always tell me, Joshua, if you really want scientific evidence, run a poll on Twitter. She used to always tell me that. So I go over to my account earlier today, which is not biased at all. It's a perfect cross-section of America. And I just put it to you like this. This college football playoff, 14 teams. Do you like it? Do you not like it? I got to give you guys credit. You used to fight me on this. You used to defend the expanded playoff. At least most of you did. I was once upon a time in the minority on this. On my own show, I was in the minority. Amongst my own people, I was in the minority. Well, as of 5:21 today, that thing's got over 7,000 votes. 73% of you do not like it. Now, of course, some of you may not like it just because you don't know the details. Some of you may not like it because you would prefer for it to stay at 14, but you just wish they took the top 14 teams. I'm going to ignore all that. I'm just going to pretend every one of you are on board with me now and what we've been singing on this show for a long time. You remember, how long ago would it have been? It would have been several years ago when they started talking about expanding past four teams. When they started talking about expanding the college football playoff past four teams, I was pretty loud in my displeasure, and a lot of people made fun of me for it. It's just a college football opinion. Like, no one's losing their life at the end of the day over it. I get it. But when they started talking about expanding it beyond four, I was very, very outspoken. And the reason was because I realized I don't think a lot of the general college football public understands how little the people in that room truly care about college football. I love it. You love it. You wouldn't be watching the show or going to the games if you didn't love it. There was this blind assumption that these people are fighting to expand the playoff because they love the same thing I love. They don't. They couldn't care less about it. They do care about money. It's not the first time that's ever been uttered. It just happened to wander its way into the college football neighborhood now. Back in the day, we didn't have a playoff at all. And a lot of folks who were very money hungry looked and said, "We got a great thing over there. That college football thing's great. Look, there's no leadership. Let's just go build an ATM and make money off of it." Now, we can't call it an ATM. The people will revolt. What should we call it? We need a name for it. It's going to print us money. What should we? Let's call it a playoff. Let's convince them they need it. And they convinced everyone, or enough people, that they needed it. And you know what? Candidly, back in the day, I was on board with a four-team playoff. But then quickly you realized, they're already talking about expanding. And it took them a little while, but they're already talking about expanding again. And the same people are negotiating with the same networks to make more and more money that I'm not going to see any of. I don't care about your ratings. I don't care about how many zeros are on the end of your media rights deal. I don't see any of it. Hey, I just want a quality product. And the more I got into our side of the business, the more I realized, dude, these people couldn't care less about the integrity, sanctity, tradition, pageantry. They don't even know how to spell those words. They especially don't care about them. And I realized, hold up now, they're talking about expanding this thing to not six, not eight. It went right to 12. And I realized there is no end in sight, because if you take away the love, you know, the love for the sport is really the only safeguard that we have built inside of us to make sure we don't do something terrible to the sport. Well, if you don't have that in you, and by the way, expanding a playoff further and further makes you more and more money, why would you ever think these people are going to stop? They never were going to stop. You see, it became apparent when they started negotiating to expand past four. And that's why I personally can't speak for anyone else, but that's why I yelled across every mountaintop I could about it at the time, because I knew once we take a step on the slope over there, it's far too slippery to gain our traction. We're gone, at least on this forefront. And here you are. Now, what I've seen overwhelmingly in sentiment is a lot of you who supported expansion have come to the realization that you were supporting the same things that some of these people were supporting, but you're finding out really quickly you didn't have the same motivation. And whereas you assumed, oh, they'll stop at this point or this point, the bus is still going 50 miles an hour picking up speed, and you're saying, whoa, 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 no, 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 I didn't agree to go any further than this. Yeah, you did. When you got on it and you sat down, You agreed to it, whether you knew it or not. So it'll be awesome. Huh, it'll be awesome, that expanded playoff. This is the one thing I wanted to hit, because we talked about this on the Late Kick Extra Pod the other day, but I didn't touch on this aspect of it, and I wanted to. So the details of this thing are still being ironed out. If you're wondering what happened, who gets how many auto bids, that didn't get sorted out. They don't really particularly care about that as much as they cared about who makes the most money. And it looks or sounds like they got that sorted out, and it looks like the SEC and the Big Ten are going to take home a lot more money than the other guys. Because as I told you the other night, the SEC and the Big Ten were dead serious in saying, you agree to this or we're walking and we're going to do our own thing. That was not a negotiation tactic. They were fully prepared to do that, and they had networks on board ready to do that. More on that in a second. So anyway, anytime I've ever entered into arguments or debates about expanding the college football playoff, one of the usual go-tos from the expansionist crowd has always been, how can you deny how great this will be? The playoff will be wonderful. And I just sit there and listen. And when they get done, I say, what are you refuting? I never said it wouldn't be awesome. And they're like, but you're against college football playoff expansion. That's correct. Why are you against it? Because I don't think it's good for college football. But you just admitted the playoff will be awesome. That's true. The playoff itself will be awesome. A 12-team or even a 14-team playoff is going to feature some pretty incredible matchups. And we're going to have home playoff games. So they're going to happen in some pretty incredible charged venues. That's not chapter one of the book. If that were all there was to it, if we didn't play a regular season and we just randomly put teams in a playoff and that was it, that was the beginning, middle, and end, it'd be wonderful. That's not college football. Never has been. Hopefully, fingers crossed, never will be. You cannot, in any scenario, expand that playoff and replace the importance of that playoff and not take it away from something else. I don't care what argument you give me. I've been through all of them, guys. I know. I know what the counterpoints to this are. I know that if we have more playoff spots, it puts more playoff emphasis on more games and makes more games more meaningful at the end of the year. No, what it does is it just does this bait and switch and it puts importance on different games. Now, here's what everyone admits. Everyone, even the expansionist crowd, admits this probably won't change who wins the championships, but it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, which is, to me, stupid, because a playoff is about crowning a champion, to me. That's just me. I'm not calling you stupid. I'm saying if you think that, I think the opinion is pretty stupid. But we can agree to disagree on that. But my point remains, okay, if you guys are focused at the end of the day on crowning a champion, and you admit the same champs are going to be crowned, here's what you've done in the aggregate. You're admitting the big boys are still the big boys. You know, so any given year, like your Georgias or Bamas or Ohio States or whatnot, they're still going to be the ones that you admittedly think are going to be there at the end of the day. Here's what you've done, though. If Georgia loses a game early this year, what you've told me is, yeah, they can afford to lose a couple. Ohio State can afford to lose a couple. They're still going to be in. We're taking the importance off of the games. We're taking the urgency off of the games that feature the only teams actually capable of winning the title, by your own admission. And we're going to place it on Oklahoma State versus Iowa State, trying to lock down an 11 seed. Does that make sense to anybody? I know what you're trying to say, because you assume, oh, those Ohio State, Bama, Georgia games, they'll always have meaning just like they always have, but now we'll have more games with meaning. Yeah, those new games have meaning. The other ones don't, because you just built a giant safety net under them. Anyway, that's for fans to argue. Like, I got a lot of buddies who support college football playoff expansion, and I know good and well when they lay their head on their pillow at night, they love the sport like I do. They just differ in opinion on what's better for it. What I'm trying to tell you is that the people whose signatures are actually going to go on that piece of paper tomorrow, in many cases, do not care. They care about totally different things. And the way I know that is because I keep reading some of the really, really good reporting being done on this, and I know a lot of the sourcing is being fed to various reporters from that room, from those people, and I haven't heard a word about fans. I haven't heard a word about players. Dude, when's the last time you ever read any reporting quoting anonymous sources about doing this in the name of crowning a champion? Do you know how long it's been since any of these people even thought about the purpose of the playoff mechanism, which, by the way, is to crown a champion? It is so far in the back of their minds, they can't even find it. It's much more about revenue distribution. It's much more about who gets auto bids, therefore who cashes the biggest check. It's never been about college football as you and I define college football, which has always been, at the core, my biggest complaint. I can argue with someone who wants expansion if they really just think it's better for college football. These folks, they don't even meet the prerequisite. I did want to draw your attention to one thing. You're going to see a lot of reporting on this tomorrow. And you're going to see that this has been signed off on. And we all expect that to happen. So you're going to see that there's this clause in there. It's called a look-in clause. It's going to be built, I believe, in 2028. And what that is, and I don't want to gloss this over because according to some folks I've talked to, this could be very, very important. That 2028 look-in clause affords everyone the opportunity to basically check in 4 years or 3 years or 2 years really into the deal. And, you know, if someone doesn't like the way it's going, they can reevaluate or, quote, according to Pete Thamel, the timeline can be accelerated if conference realignment happens. I don't know when. I don't know where. Well, I think I do know where. I don't know when, but I think it's coming pretty quickly. So I don't necessarily know, even though we've got a framework that's about to be signed off on, there's going to be language in that framework that renders it potentially moot or, you know, able to be crumbled up and thrown in the nearest garbage can if some things that I think are inevitable come to pass. So who knows how long this thing really is that we're signing off on, but I say we. I'm not signing off on anything. But we are watching it get signed off on, and that's where we are right now. And it's going to be a happy day for some people in expensive suits tomorrow. Happy to have you guys with us. It's not like we don't have real college football to talk about. I did want to get that out of the way, though. So we were sitting around the office today. We were looking at some of the conferences and some of the stuff that we try and compile to get ready for summer. And we always like to take spring and talk about where the potential chaos scenarios could be. You know, how established, in other words, are the favorites in this conference or that conference? How many tiers are there? So let's take a look at the conferences across college football. What are the chaos scenarios, and what is the potential for chaos? And I wanted to start in the Big Ten, because over at FanDuel, it's really obvious if you look at the preseason odds, there are four teams with plus 600 or better odds to win the conference. It's a very, very clear tier one. And then there's pretty clear delineation with USC and Iowa being 5 and 6. And then there's another big drop off, and it's the rest of the conference. So what would chaos be? Well, I mean, Oregon winning the thing wouldn't be chaos. They're the second favorite in the conference right now, even though I think a lot of people may be surprised. Like, I think the casual fan would be surprised if Oregon or like a Penn State were to win the Big Ten. But you shouldn't be, because they've got the second and fourth best odds respectively in the conference to start the season. Iowa and USC are sitting down there sixth and fifth. I think that would surprise some people. And in the process of them winning the Big Ten, that would be chaos. But I think Nebraska and Wisconsin, either of those teams making a run, and I would guess Wisconsin's more likely out of that group to make a run, that would be the chaos scenario. Wisconsin plays Bama early in the year in out-of-conference action. If they were to win that game, that'd be a wake-up call to the Big Ten. It wouldn't matter in Big Ten play, but it would be a wake-up call. Wisconsin's over-under right now, 6.5. And if they were to win that game, obviously the live market odds would shoot way up from 6.5, but also then you'd start asking yourself, well, if they can beat Bama, like, what's the insurmountable hurdle they have out here? So right now, I'm going to put it on a 3 on the 1 to 10 chaos potential scale, but I'm monitoring the Big Ten. Now, in the SEC, on the other hand, the SEC's got chaos potential written all over it. So at FanDuel, there are 7 SEC teams with plus 1,500 or better odds to win the conference, and it's Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, LSU, Bama, Tennessee, and then Missouri. And then it's not a big drop-off to Texas A&M, honestly. So then there's a big drop-off after that. And how about this? How about of those 7 teams I just read, we're not even including Oklahoma. They're down there at like 9th. Auburn's at 10th. So there are legit brands that have done things in the past and probably will do something at some point again. Those could be the chaos agents. I would say if Georgia gets bitten early, that would be sort of like the game-on moment. Because we're not talking about making the playoff now. We're just talking about in-conference play. I think Missouri could be a chaos agent. Missouri's over-under win total is 9.5. Like, Colin, can you throw those odds back up for me for just a second, by the way? I think if you pictured in your mind, hey, like, where does Missouri stack up? You would say, oh, they're always, like, bottom tier. They're always third tier, maybe. Well, it's Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, LSU, Bama, Tennessee. Missouri's that seventh team. Like, Missouri's got very comparable odds to Tennessee. They've got better odds than A&M and Oklahoma and Auburn. Yet, I don't think the general college football public, even after an 11-win season last year, thinks of Missouri as being in that air. And traditionally, if a team that you don't think is in that kind of rarefied air has a big 11-win season, you think of them as falling back to the pack the next year, like what TCU just did last year. I don't think that's going to happen with Missouri. Missouri's going to be very competitive this year. And I think they probably have the best chance of being the chaos agent. But also, this is the most competitive tier two group of teams out of any of these conferences we're talking about. And that's why it's not quite an any given Saturday. I do not think if I played 10 games, Vanderbilt would beat Georgia any of those 10 times. But outside of that very bottom rung, this is going to be an ultra-competitive conference this upcoming year, which is a recipe for chaos. So I'm putting an 8 on the chaos scale there. And not too far from that is the ACC. And I think I got to go with a 7 on the ACC spring chaos potential scale. I've called the scale 4 different things so far tonight. Can you tell that we did not name the segment? We did not. Our buddies at FanDuel have 4 teams in the ACC at plus 500 or better. The odds right now, keep in mind it is Thursday night, March 14th. Clemson and Florida State have the exact same odds to win the ACC. Miami's 3rd, Louisville's 4th. Fairly big drop off to NC State. What would the chaos be in this conference? Strangely, if Miami won the ACC, people would think it was a shocker. And you shouldn't. According to the odds market, you shouldn't. But I think that would be shocking to some people. The more casual crowd that doesn't stay tuned in or gets themselves married to this ideology that someone can't do something just because they haven't. Yeah, they'd be shocked by Miami. So that would be quote-unquote chaos, but not really. But NC State winning the thing would be a little more chaotic. Dave Doran has been the model of consistency. We're going to talk about him a little later in the show. You know he's entering his 12th year at NC State. And dude just wins 9 games every year, but hasn't gotten over that hump. And so if they won it, that would be surprising. But Virginia Tech, SMU, that would be probably the group of teams that if they made the move, that would be the chaos agent cluster, the CAC, for lack of a better term. There's a chance. Here would be the chaos scenario. Maybe there are just no elite teams. Maybe there are no tier one teams in the ACC this year. If that's the case, then it's game on because then everyone can beat everyone within reason. So I think, yeah, I expect some chaos in the ACC. Now the Big 12, this is the easiest one in the whole bunch. It's a 10. In the Big 12, chaos is going to happen. It will be the chaos conference. 10 teams in the Big 12 have plus 1,900 or better odds. It's basically FanDuel's version of saying, you think you know this conference? Have at it. Here are the odds. Like Utah's favored, but Kansas State's right there with them. And then you got 3 more teams with plus 850 or better odds. How is this not going to be chaotic? Where's the elite roster? In the SEC, you could circle a team like Georgia and say, hey, if they have their act together, that's going to be pretty cut and dry. You could do the same thing with Ohio State or a Michigan in the Big Ten. Hey, if they've got their act together, or in Oregon, it's going to be pretty cut and dry. This conference right here, there is no top 10 recruiter perennially. Jesse, is there even a top 20 recruiter perennially? I don't think there is right there. So it's just a developmental conference. So there's no large roster gap. Really good coaching up and down the conference. And Kyle Whittingham is coming into the conference. So I don't know how. How in the world would we ever have a year in the Big 12, given the nature in the post-OU Texas era, where someone just kind of glides through to the finish line? That will not happen. So the Big 12, I mean, I don't know what kind of prop bet I would need, but I would bet an unhealthy sum of money that will be the chaos conference this year. All right. How nice to talk football. How nice that is. So much so that we're about to do it again. I do have some stuff on the back end. Immunity. Yeah, for old time's sake there. But I do have some things, regrettably, that are off-field in nature to talk about in a little while. But not yet. Not yet. Sip from the chalice, please. Okay. It's spring practice. Now, what I've gathered is some of you care about spring practice. Some of you don't care about spring practice. That's okay. What we do, if we talk about spring practice, is we don't really talk spring practice. What I always do is I have our ear to the ground, and whatever we're hearing, I always try and push it ahead to the fall. Like, what's it going to mean? So, with that in mind, Colin, here's your endpoint. Some of the biggest spring questions, specifically around the SEC, I wanted to hit. Chris Hummer did a great job over at 247sports.com, and this piece is still up if you want to. We took a lot from that and combined it with some stuff we're hearing, and I want to start with Georgia for just a second because it's not really centered around a mass exodus. A lot of these other teams we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about questions with them because they lost a lot of players. Well, Georgia on the defensive line didn't lose a ton. It's just that they lost a ton 2 years ago. So last year, for example, they used to be third in the nation in yards per rushing attempt. Well, last year they were 37th. It's not a knock. It's just hard to lose that much talent and remain at the level they were playing at. Last year, they were 68th in sacks per game. They had 60 less pressures defensively last year than they did the year before. So they've recruited well. They've developed well. Talk to Kirby last week or 2 weeks ago about it. Colin, actually, let's hear what Kirby had to say about it.
Two or three things that have your attention the most as spring ball opens would be what?
Depth. Depth at all positions. Like, can we create offensive and defensive line depth? So when I look across football, the game's changing. Less big guys are playing. There's less. I mean, every NFL scout that comes in here says, we can't find offensive linemen. We can't find offensive linemen. Well, that's what we do here. We recruit offensive linemen, we get big guys, and we develop them. Defensive linemen, there's just less of them. There's less big people. So we want to establish depth at both those positions, and we got a lot of young guys in here at those two positions.
If they're worried about it at Georgia, they're worried about it everywhere. So defensive line is what I'm focused on with Georgia. Could have gone wide receiver too, but I went defensive line. How about the DB position at Tennessee? They lost five starters in the defensive backfield off a defense that was very improved for Josh Heupel and his defensive staff last year. They've got a couple of injured guys back. They've got a couple of transfers coming in. They got a couple of underclassmen. So, like, it's not bubblegum and paper clips that they're building the secondary with. They have guys with promise. This is college football. It's not the NFL. You don't know the names of everyone who are going to end up being big contributors for you this fall. It's just that Tennessee has to have several of them come together if they want to hang out in the same kind of territory they did defensively last year. Same position, different team. Alabama at defensive back. This probably won't get as much attention in the spring outside of Tuscaloosa. But Bama's losing 104 combined starts in their secondary. They lost Kool-Aid, Terrion Arnold to the draft, Caleb Downs transferred. They lost Earl Little, Christian Story, Trey Amos to the transfer portal. I've got buddies claiming to know me better than anyone, calling me during a live show. And Malachi Moore's back, and who else? Not really anyone you would know. So, again, it's kind of like Tennessee. I would say Bama's probably recruited an even better caliber athlete in the secondary than Tennessee. You just don't know them. So I actually pulled up with producer Jesse earlier today. Their last few recruiting classes, their depth in the secondary going into the spring, and they brought in some transfers too. And I thought to myself, I actually like these players, but that doesn't mean anything because they have to play as a unit, and you've got new staff in there as well. So that's what God invented spring football for. That's why it's a question mark instead of a weakness. There are no weaknesses in spring, as Meemaw says, only question marks. LSU's defensive line, having said that, is a question mark. They are losing three key guys at LSU. They lost Wingo, they lost Smith, they lost Jefferson, and they were, even with those guys, 91st in the country last year in rush yards allowed. So they were already subpar, which came as a surprise. Having said that, the defensive staff last year was very subpar. They had the lowest graded defensive staff. According to our internal numbers, they had the lowest graded defensive staff in the SEC. They'll have one of the best this year. I could talk to you about players. Honestly, I'm focused on Bo Davis coming in there. I'm focused on Kevin Peoples coming in there. Blake Baker is the defensive coordinator. But the previous two names I mentioned are both guys who are four-star or better coaches, and they are both going to be coaching that defensive line. And that's why I don't know if they're going to be top 10 in the country, but whatever LSU's potential is on the defensive line specifically this year, they will maximize it. they will maximize whatever potential they have. Last year, as you well know, they had a Heisman caliber quarterback. In fact, he won the Heisman. I have it on good word. He did. And yet they lost three games because they could not stop molasses in December. So inexcusable, got to be better. Texas A&M knew everything out there, right? Well, not necessarily. They are 18th in returning production. They did have a lot of guys go out via the portal. They've got a lot of them coming in via the portal. Mike Elko's got a new staff. But they've got some continuity on the roster. One place they don't have it so much is defensive back. They've only got one starter returning back there. Now, they got 10 new scholarship DBs on campus and got big names still to come. They're trying the LSU approach, kind of. You remember this time last year, we actually had Brian Kelly on the show, and I said, you're bringing in all these DBs off the transfer portal market. They're just all going to gel and coalesce. He actually was very honest about it. He said, no, that's a red flag for us. That should be. You should call it a red flag for us. We don't know if that's going to work out. Well, it didn't. And so will it work out with Texas A&M? Not a weakness. That's why we call it a question. And also, stay in the state of Texas, but let's go down to Austin. And that is the defensive line. That's the position unit in question that I want to talk about there. They're losing high-level run stuffers. Well, they're losing high-level defensive linemen, but specifically Sweat and Murphy against the run, about as effective as it gets. It's not always a red flag. This is, again, this is where you test your development, where you test your recruiting. Texas has done both very well. You go stack as many of these guys as you can so that when these kinds of times come, you're ready for it. Now, they went and got an NFL replacement for Bo Davis leaving as defensive line coach. So we're watching that. Kerry Baker, I believe, is who came in there from the Dolphins. So we're watching that. And that's secondary to the actual players who are going to be on the field. Those are some of the things we've got our eye on. And as we start tailoring our latter spring coverage, I start giving you some scoop and some intel and nuggets we're picking up on, you'll probably hear a lot about those position units.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Moving along, happy to have you guys in here. Make sure you are subscribed to the channel. Now look, another warning since we have a bigger audience now. Things are going to look a lot different for several weeks coming up. Many of our live shows are about to be on the road. I mean, we got about, I think, 12 or 13 campuses, campi, plural for campus, that we are about to visit. So a lot of our live shows are just going to be on the road. We got a Sunday live show coming up. You know what? I'll let you know when I can let you know, but we got a lot of stuff about to go on. But the point is, the show's going to go on. It's just going to be different because, I mean, we got hammers and nails and boards all over the place. They're building us a new studio right now. We really appreciate it. It's going to be really, really nice when they get that thing done. You do the work now in spring so that we can have it for football season. But we're going to be all over the place. It's going to look a little discombobulated. Close your eyes and the show will sound and feel the exact same. That is the promise of not me. Hey, I just hope things work out for the best. But Colin and Jesse are promising you. Yes? Yeah, they didn't disagree. So there we go. Colin, do you have that tweet from the gas station? Yeah, okay. So I know that sounds a little weird if you're listening on podcast. But one of the more unexpected and, quite frankly, underrated feuds that has emerged in the college football space in 2024 is me versus Quick Trip, the gas station. So I'm minding my own business the other day, and I ask for submissions for the Late Kick Extra podcast, and then Quick Trip just starts throwing haymakers left and right. And there's been this pretty toxic back and forth between Pate State and Quick Trip, the Twitter account, ever since. Well, I put out the call to action the other day, and sure enough, there's Quick Trip. Should be selling snacks, should be pumping gas. Instead, they're submitting questions for the pod. And they said, what is your go-to convenience store snack? Well, you know what? It takes a big man to put aside his differences and answer the question, and I am that big man. I go with the Planters Trail Mix. I'm a name brand guy. You guys can have the store-bought variety, unless I'm at Buc-ee's, who we pledge allegiance to every day on this show. Unless I'm taking the Buc-ee's brand name stuff, I got to go with the big boys. I got to go with Planters, and I go with the Trail Mix, but they go heavy on the raisins sometimes. Colin, I know you hate that as well. They go really heavy on the raisins. And so to our, not necessarily our friends, but our acquaintances at Quick Trip, if you guys could just do me one favor, I don't want any human hands touching it. It needs to be more like Buc-ee's, never touched by the human hands. If you guys could just remove the raisins from the Planters Trail Mix, otherwise I'd be good to go. And you may get more visits from me. Good? Good. Okay, so there we go. We've done our duty for Quick Trip tonight. Oh, boy. Guys, I'm trying to figure out what attitude I want to have as I talk about this next topic. Because it seems like the kind of thing that should get me worked up. But I'm not really worked up about it. So I'm going to take a sip from the chalice and I'll let you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so lost in... Colin, here's a good endpoint for you, by the way. Lost in all the other big headlines over the past couple of weeks, James in New Orleans noticed this. What is your verdict on college football games happening on Fridays now, yay or nay? So what he's talking about is The Athletic had a story a couple days ago now. Time's running together for me. It was this week at some point. And they said that Fox Sports will have a package of college football games on Friday nights. I say that like it's plural. They'll have one game per Friday night. And it'll be a Big Ten, Big 12, Mountain West. It'll be like a combination of those teams. So no SEC, no ACC. But they're going to have, in their mind, the best game on Friday, and then they'll have big noon kickoff on Saturday. They lost WWE. So what was it, Jesse? SmackDown was on Fox, right? on Friday nights. So back in my day, it was on Thursday, but I digress. So they lost the WWE contract. And as soon as that happened, there was talk within the industry that they were going to put a college football package on Friday night to fill that space. So they've done that. Okay. So some people had outrage over this. Some others just looked at it and said, "Ugh, that was kind of me." In fact, I looked at it and said, "All right," because I'm not quite sure where the outrage is coming from, because college football's been happening on Friday nights for a long time. Am I wrong on this? College football games have been happening on Thursday. Much bigger games used to happen on Thursday than they do now. But Friday night games have been happening for quite a while. Like, I know this because once upon a time down in Columbus, I was working local news. I'd have to be out shooting high school football games, and I'd be checking my phone on Friday night games that are being played. And that is your pushback on this, by the way. A lot of you who have a problem with this, you're saying Friday night should be for high school football. And I don't disagree with you. I mean, you're making a good point, and I fully support high school football. But I think a lot of times it's the report that leads to the outrage more so than the thing itself. For example, if you were to open your phone right now and it said, "Breaking news, terrible drivers plan nationwide clogging of passing lanes on interstates starting tomorrow," you'd be outraged. But the thing about it is, it happens every day in America. Take it from someone who drives a lot. The left lane, people, is not just like any other lane. It's not you get on the on-ramp and then flip a coin and whatever it lands on, I'll just pick a lane. They're all the same. They're not all the same. Get over. I know I sound 75 right now, but what I'm saying is right. I cannot trust that all of you guys have been taught to drive properly, especially my college crowd. So take it from Uncle JP. That left lane is for passing or faster traffic, and those right lanes are for everyone else. And you can be either, but just make a choice. Don't hang out in that left lane. Well, anyway, if there was a report that came out that broke the news that people were planning on doing that, you'd take to Twitter and you'd call your buddies and you'd say, "Did you hear what they're planning on doing in the left lane tomorrow?" Well, instead, you're just going to wake up tomorrow and get out on the road and you're going to see it. And, you know, you'll be aggravated by it, but you won't be outraged. I think if this report would not have surfaced and Iowa just played Purdue on a Friday night, you wouldn't really care all that much. But because you saw a report about it, they're coming for high school football. They're coming to take high school football from us. In my perfect world, guys, Friday would be exclusive for high school. Saturday would be exclusive for college, and Sunday would be exclusive for the NFL. But we don't live in a perfect world. We live in a world where Stanford can see the Pacific Ocean, yet also play in the ACC. That's the world we live in right now. So it was tough for me to be overly outraged by it. If you are, I get it. I'm not happy about it per se, but it got to like a 3 maybe on my 1 to 10 rage scale. And that rage scale has been peaking lately. So trust me, it works. It's calibrated. Next up, this is a fun thing that we were going to do like 2 weeks ago, and we kept having to put it off, so we're doing it tonight. You know, that's worth a paper pop. Persistence pays off. Kendall hit me up and said, "Hey, which coaches do you think have a chance to win their first conference title this year?" Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri. What? Missouri can't win the SEC. No, they haven't. Big difference in haven't and can't. They haven't won the SEC. It's the curse of SEC affiliation, actually, because if I were to take Missouri as is and put them in the Big 12, my guess is they'd be favored to win the conference. And if they weren't, they'd be right up there. They would be very competitive in the odds market in the ACC as well. So just because they're in the SEC, same team, different conference, people look down on them. Well, they're returning Brady Cook again at quarterback. Luther Burden, maybe the best receiver in the country. He's back again. They're 31st in returning production from a team that just went 11-2. That doesn't guarantee anything, but it makes me feel a lot better, because normally when a team like Missouri wins 11 games, it's because they were loaded to the gills with a bunch of guys who were about to go off to the NFL or maybe the portal, and that didn't necessarily happen to the degree that it gutted their roster. Like, Michigan's in the low 120s in returning production. Washington's like 130 in returning production. Missouri won 11 games, 31st returning production. They were 13th in the portal rankings as well, so they brought in some guys. They hired extremely well. They lost some good coaches,
and they backfilled with just as good a caliber coach, and we track that stuff. They also avoid Georgia, Texas, LSU, and Tennessee in conference play. So it's doable, man. I know it's tough, but it's doable. What about Dan Lanning? Feels like an inevitability that he'll eventually win a conference title. Played for one last year. We were there, actually, on a Friday, no less. We were there. So Dan Lanning could win a first conference title in his career this year. It would be a Big Ten title. Could have the best quarterback room in the country, maybe. At least one of the best quarterback rooms in the country. They are one of probably, I'd say, four or five really legit contenders for the Big Ten championship this year. They'll hold up in the Big Ten at the line of scrimmage, which is something I'm not as ready to say about Washington or USC or UCLA. And so, I mean, that's why FanDuel has them with the number two best odds to win the conference. Who can victimize their secondary? If you're talking about Oregon right now and you got questions about them, it probably starts in the secondary, I would guess. And so that's one thing. Okay, it's one thing to have maybe a weakness, but who on your schedule is built to expose it is the follow-up question. We've seen in this sport in the past, there have been teams with glaring weaknesses, but they just play a conference schedule that's not built to expose it. So on Oregon's schedule right now, you find me the quarterback or quarterbacks who are built to expose that weakness, perceived weakness in the secondary. Ohio State, they play at home in Autzen October 12th. I think we may be at that game. We'll see. But outside of that, where are we looking? Where are we looking now? Admittedly, I have no clue what Wisconsin will look like by November 16th with Tyler Van Dyke up there. I was looking at one of our shows we did this time last year when he had patented the nickname Tyler Van Dyme. I haven't forgotten. All right. Also, Dave Doran. I talked about him earlier, NC State's head coach. Dave Doran entering year 12 at NC State. Just the model of consistency. He has won nine or more games six of the last 7 years. Got the fifth best odds to win the ACC this year. So again, let's just picture a scenario this year where Clemson is not quite elite. Florida State lost a lot from last year. Maybe they're good, but not great. They're not quite elite. Hey, that's a conference that could be really, really muddy, and it could be really hazy, and then all of a sudden, that little Wolfpack logo at the end emerges. Wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world, and it would be Dave Doran's first conference championship. So Clemson, FSU, Miami, Louisville, NC State, they have the fifth best odds in the conference right now. They play Tennessee, I believe, in Charlotte, yeah, in week two. That'll be a pretty good gauge because they go to Clemson 2 weeks later. They don't play FSU in the regular season. So let's keep an eye on them. And lastly, this is a state I'll be in next week, actually. Lance Leipold is entering his fourth year at Kansas, and they got a shot. I mean, candidly, a lot of folks have a shot in the Big 12, but they've gone from 2-10 to 6-7 to 9-4. We call that trajectory. It's not always pretty and linear, but in Kansas's case, it has been. Jalen Daniels is back. The talk around college football last year, should let you in on a little something. The talk was he was good as gone. And then he put out a statement that said, nope, all of you were wrong. And I'm happy about it. Everyone was wrong. I believed it. And so I was wrong too, I guess. Or maybe things changed. Either way, they've got him back. And if he's healthy, they've got one of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12. And their schedule is primed. They have the third best odds to win the conference, by the way. In football, yeah. Now, they have a weird home schedule situation this year where they're going to play some of their games at Arrowhead Stadium. They'll play their other home games at the stadium of Sporting KC, which for those of you who are unwashed is known as soccer. And so they're having renovations done on their stadium. That's why that's happening. So that'd be kind of weird to win your first conference title and not even have a home game to do it, technically, but crazier things have happened. They're watching us in Pickering, Ontario, Canada, Woodbine, Kentucky, San Diego, California, St. Simon's Island, down in Georgia. You know, I've never been there, and I grew up in Georgia. There's a weird thing about the coast of Georgia, because it's forever away from Harris County, where I grew up, and I never went over there. We take field trips to Tybee Island, but it was in Little League baseball season, so we couldn't go then. I mean, we didn't necessarily have a timeshare over off the coast. So, well, I mean, I don't think I've ever been there. Larry Munson used to talk about that place all the time on Georgia radio broadcast, and I've never been there. Shame on me. Shame. Savannah's really nice, though. Really like Savannah. Okay, let's talk about this thing. So I try not to let it get buried in all of the playoff expansion talk that we also have this whole sideshow happening with the ACC in Florida State, right? Colin, here's the end point. So Bud Royster hit me and said, why would ESPN drop the ACC in 2027? Now, what he's talking about is some reporting that Ross Dellinger did last week that I will read for you in just a second, because I really harped on it for a reason, because I had been winking and nodding at you on this show and hinting at it for a little while. FSU is thought to be locked in. The ACC is thought to be locked in with ESPN via that grant of rights until 2036. And it is thought to be the albatross around the ankle, and it's just going to be terrible for everyone, but they can't get out. They can't go anywhere. Well, that's not necessarily true. It hasn't been true. It just wasn't known because no one had their hand on that grant of rights until they did. And so in these legal proceedings that have been going back and forth, it was finally revealed, and I'm going to read from the Dellinger piece that was written last week. Here's what was revealed. While ESPN's contract with the ACC extends through 2036, the network has the option to opt out of the final 9 years starting in 2027, a way that ESPN itself could possibly reopen the grant of rights or at the very least restructure the deal. Now, could a restructured deal with uneven distribution prevent more departures? Would an ESPN opt-out swing open the door for more schools to exit? The network, pay attention here, the network must exercise the option by February of 2025. And so what I said on the Sunday show was, that's a very real possibility. Bud is hitting me back and saying, well, why would they do that? They got a really sweet deal there. They're paying next to nothing. They've got some really good inventory, one of the Power Four conferences. Well, that's a good question, Bud. So there are a few reasons why it could happen. The first is maybe you got deals with other conferences, and maybe you think some of those ACC properties of yours make more sense in another bucket than the bucket they're currently in. I mean, that's pretty cut and dry. If you own the ACC, but you also own the SEC, and you think you could further bolster the SEC's portfolio and disproportionately make more money off that than having these brands tucked away in a much less valuable ACC, maybe you'd entertain it. But the other reason could be maybe one or more of those member institutions is going to leave either way. Now, right now, FSU, or anyone else, would have to pay an astronomical sum of money to get out of there. Don't focus so much on how they're going to raise the capital, but I'm telling you in fact, no uncertain terms, they're getting out of there. Florida State's gone one way or the other. Folks in the room have known this for a while. And so maybe ESPN, or maybe the folks at ESPN, would be looking and saying, well, if this thing has a chance of dissolving anyway, might we want to exercise options in our control while it's still within our control? Because it could get really crazy if we wait till it's not in our control anymore. You can't know, is the point. Right now, I am 14 floors above downtown Nashville. If we heard a loud sound, we could easily go out and see over several city blocks. What was it? But if we're on the street, if we're down here on Commerce Street, we could hear that loud sound and we don't know what it was. We can't see through buildings. We can't see around the corner. Well, we can't see around the corner on this stuff right now. But if you start putting two and two together, And maybe I'm kind of fibbing there, because we do have kind of an elevated view. I mean, there are some folks that we can get bits and pieces of news from. But if you start putting two and two together here, I don't really know that many people think the ACC is just going to remain intact. The question is more, how is this going to happen? And the other question is, when is it going to happen? Now, the how I just detailed could be several different ways. And then there's that fun game of, well, if the ACC does break up, where are those member institutions going? How many of them are attractive? But when it happens is the really fun question, guys. Because I don't know if you think about sports like I do, especially college football. You know, once upon a time, it seemed like if any big changes were coming in college sports, it was always way off in the distance. Years down the road. How many times have you had the olds tell you, oh, it's going to be years before that happens? Well, it's going to be months before this happens. So You remember I said that on March 14th. I've been saying it for a while. You will know something about the future of FSU maybe by the start of this football season. Like, this won't be that much further down the road because the wheels have been in motion and a lot of this stuff is nearing the finish line of how it's going to turn out, however it's going to turn out. So, our partners at FanDuel, I don't think have odds on that. And I have spoken with them about such things and they have, in no uncertain terms, told me, we can't do that. It's unethical. How would we ever even go about that? So, short of bankrolling it myself, which I think is also probably illegal, short of doing that, we just have to have fun with it. But what you can do is you can go bet FSU right now to win the ACC at plus 280 odds. You can do that at FanDuel. You could go bet some of Florida State's games on the line right now at FanDuel. FanDuel is the exclusive odds provider of our show. We appreciate them so much. A very valuable partner. And as I've told you for the last month or two, we've got some really fun things that we're going to do with them this year. So just getting started, I would say. Just getting started with them.
Must be 21 or over and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
All right. There is a way we're going to end the show tonight. There is a topic I hold in my hand that quite honestly, I didn't know that we would ever talk about this. It's worth a sip from the chalice. I'm going to try and keep my composure. Okay, so listen to this one. Lee from Tallahassee, Florida said, first, thank you for not being Brandon Walker. You're welcome, Lee. He continues. Question, Bud Elliott has hinted at and maybe even argued for a college draft and elimination of eligibility restrictions. Do you see either of these awful, awful options as legitimate possibilities? Now, I will admit to you, I haven't heard Bud say that. And I drove all the way back from Harris County to Nashville last night. So I listened to the most recent episode of Cover 3, and I did not hear anything like that. That doesn't mean he hasn't said it. That just means I haven't particularly heard it. But let's just pretend like he did, and let's have some fun at Bud's expense here. I actually presented this idea once upon a time, but as many frequent listeners and viewers of the show know, sometimes I do the whole alternate universe thing, which is where in a consequence-free environment and a responsibility-free environment, I can just make things up. Famously, I have an opinion that I think is so radical in this alternate universe that I haven't even presented it on this network, this platform, this show before. And I still am not going to do it. It has to do with scheduling, but I'm not going to do it yet. But I did, once upon a time, just kind of wonder aloud. Colin happened to have the mic on and the camera rolling. I just wondered aloud, what would college football be like if players got drafted instead of recruited? Well, like, what would it look like? Forget about how crazy the idea is or how unfunctional it would be. Just what if it happened? Like, what would it look like? Now, the first thing I thought was what it would do to the recruiting industry. So the recruiting industry would, it would still exist, but I almost wonder how much different it would look like. Would it look like the mock draft community? Would we have, I think the 7-on-7 circuit, I think the camp circuit would become much more combine-esque And I think that instead of having individual camps on home campuses, or campi, plural of campus, you would have regional camps, which kind of already exist, where, but there would be mega camps, like the Atlanta Combine, the Cleveland Combine. And I think that all the teams would go there. I think that would happen. I also think that you would have to shave it down considerably from 134 teams. Because we're going to have a snake draft. What are we going to do? It's like a fantasy football team or league. So I think what you would do is you would probably, I don't know, shave it down to the power four, the power two even. And then is everyone just getting equal numbers of draft picks? Can you imagine knocking on the door at Georgia and saying, Kirby, not recruiting anymore. You can get rid of all these guys now. We are going to draft. We're going to draft. So you're going to have the same opportunity to select players as South Carolina does and as Kentucky does. And how do you feel about that, bud? Huh? You've heard some of his locker room speeches. You'd get that on camera. You'd probably get it. So again, for a million and one reasons, I don't think it would happen. But in some alternate universe, it's interesting to think about how it would happen. Now, the elimination of eligibility, that's actually something at the personnel symposium we have here in Nashville every year. A lot of people in the industry were here last year, and that came up. I remember that came up. And people were just, it was an open forum, throw out some ideas and let's talk about them. And someone said, hey, what if we just didn't have eligibility? I mean, we're in an environment right now where guys are playing their seventh and eighth years. What if we just didn't have eligibility? What if the true market forces of need were all that dictated whether you were on a team or not? I don't think I'd be a fan of that either, because one of the things I love about college football is things keep moving. Like, guys keep coming in, guys keep leaving. Everything, every roster is refreshed. It's like completely turned over every two or three years. I actually like that. I also think it's a way to inject hope into fan bases that have been long suffering, because you've always got that freshman class coming in. You don't want to be getting beaten over the head by a team and then look and say, Ladd McConkey can play another 5 years at Georgia if he wants to? What? What? No. So I wouldn't want that either. But I had one other thing. Okay, so since Bud allegedly said this, I want to throw a third thing in there. Now, this won't be popular in these hallways, but everyone's gone home for the night already. I'm not advocating for this. I'm just asking, what would this be like? Imagine if I snap my fingers and recruiting rankings just didn't exist. On Three's not there, 24/7's not there, Rivals not there. None of these things ever existed. Like, it was never born as an idea. You can go back even before the website era. Imagine if there was just college football teams recruiting guys they've scouted, but the public has no metric that's placed on the players. Imagine how many more schools would have more hope going into a year. See, that's crazy. Like, a lot of people say expanding the playoff is going to give more teams more hope. Buddy, if you did away with recruiting rankings, you wouldn't know that you've been on average recruiting the 45th best class in the country. You just think, hey, we got a linebacker that apparently is pretty good, and he had an offer from Ole Miss, and he came here. So that's great, because we're Middle Tennessee, so that's great, right? And, you know, then what's going to happen is going to happen to you on the field, but you wouldn't know what to expect. What are you going to do? Go scout all of them yourself? Of course you're not. That kind of footage is on the recruiting websites, and they wouldn't exist in this hypothetical scenario. Now, it should be noted I would not have a job in this scenario either, because I was hired by 24/7 Sports 4 years ago. So the more I thought it through, the more I realized this probably is not well thought out for me. But in a fun, hypothetical, alternate universe, it's at least interesting. You know what? Here's a little call to action in the comment section down there. You don't have to put your name to this. You don't have to advocate it for it actually happening. But if you just have fun over in, like, fantasy land, what is one switch you wish you could flip in the sport just to see what would happen? Have a draft, have no eligibility, have no recruiting rankings. Those were the ones we talked about. What would you have happen? You know, would you do away with pass interference just to see what would happen? Why not play a game without helmets? Again, there's no consequence. There's no risk. We just get to do it. It's not real. It's a simulation. Relegation? Anyone? Promotion and relegation system? It's all fair game in Fantasyland. Thank you guys so much for watching and listening. For Director Colin, for Producer Jesse, I'm Josh Pate. Take care, have a great start to your weekend, and God bless. Must be 21 or over and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit GamblingHelplineMA.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.